Welcome to From the Producer's Office, a series of informal podcasts with Opera Holland Park's Director of Opera, James Clutton. In conversation with creatives and collaborators, we explore the process of putting opera on stage and how the artists involved approach their craft.
Welcome to From the Producer's Office. I'm James Clutton, Director of Opera, Opera Holland Park. My guest today is Isabella Pittman, founder, I think we're going to talk about that more in a minute, but founder and certainly one of the leaders of the National Student Opera Society. Good morning, Izzy.
Good morning.
So let's start right at that then. So are you the founder, one of the founders? What are you?
Well, I don't want to put a label on myself, but I suppose I did come up with the idea. I was at university. It was a couple of years ago, I think 2018, and I sort of had a look around at the people who were engaging with opera at my university, and you know, you can see particular backgrounds emerging and a certain type of culture, and I thought to myself, you know what, let's try and get something together that can create a network of people across the UK who all love opera.
So it's an amazing thing, and it's like all really, really good ideas. As soon as you see it, you think, well, I thought that must have existed because it just had the right things. Right? Let's go back and talk about you yourself first of all, though. Did you grow up in a family of musicians, people loving opera, or how did you come to it?
No, not really. I mean, there was music in my family, but it was, you know, jazz music or folk music, not classical really at all. I didn't have any interest in classical music at all until I was at least 17. So I loved musical theatre, absolutely loved it. And I got into sort of performing in amateur productions of, you know, Les Mis and Phantom and the ones that nobody's ever heard of, like Secret Garden.
I
wouldn't
like
recommend.
Garden,
really?
Yeah.
So I started singing a bit, and it became quite obvious that I wasn't going to become a sort of big belty singer. And my singing teacher said, oh, you know, why don't you try singing some classical music? So I did. And initially I wasn't that taken with it, to be honest. But as I sort of sang more and more and listened to different bits of repertoire that, of course, you know, I had no idea. It was sort of standalone arias, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Madame Butterfly, generally Puccini, that kind of
small
thing.
Small stuff then, yeah.
Yeah. No. As an 18-year-old should have been singing. I listened to more and enjoyed it more and more. And I think my 18th or 19th birthday, I went to see La Traviata at the Royal Opera House. And I just had a fantastic time, and I felt like I had sort of engaged with it on a different level. So from there on, I just, you know, listened to more and more, and there we go.
Amazing, isn't it? Well, I mean, you opened this conversation by saying about you looking around at university and saying about people engaging. You obviously thought it was necessary, but why did you think it was necessary? I think, let me say, from our point of view as managements of companies, we love it. We love what you're doing. But why did you think it was necessary at that point?
Well, I think, you know, when you're particularly interested in a subject or a particular hobby or whatever, you want to know that there are like-minded people who you can share your enthusiasm with. You know, it's all very well having a passion on your own, but it's fantastic to be able to share it with other people.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was very aware of the lack of sort of provision when it came to classical music all throughout my schooling career.
Yeah.
And when I reached university, I started to notice that there was a kind of base level of knowledge that people from certain backgrounds had. It was certain, you know, certain connections, certain networks, and you know, if you were from a local comprehensive school that didn't have a music specialism or you didn't have a particular network, it was very difficult to sort of engage with opera like everyone else. So I think what I hope NSOS can do is to provide a sort of level playing field for people and allow them to develop contacts and skills and networks, regardless of where they've come from before, you know, the age of sort of 16, 18 or so.
And when you, because you and Joe approached me, and I think, when did you say you started at 18, was it?
Yeah, roughly.
You approached me at Holland Park and talked about it, and I obviously loved it. I loved the idea of younger people coming to the shows, obviously. It must have been a similar reaction that I gave to from most companies, because it is the holy grail for most companies, and younger audiences come in. So you were in touch with a lot of companies straight away, but you're not only us. I mean, you can say other companies.
Well, actually, we weren't in touch with a vast number. We were, our main two points of contact to begin with were yourselves and Water Perry Opera. I think, you know, we wanted
love them.
To
love Water Perry.
Yeah, and we wanted to get behind companies that we saw as sort of paralleling our own aims and objectives. I think you know, we saw Water Perry, which is obviously young and upcoming and that kind of thing, and it was very exciting that, you know, we got the opportunity to do a couple of events with them and to get to know them. And then of course something that's a bit more established like Opera Holland Park is a fantastic place to be able to, you know, make our membership aware of and to be able to have that ongoing relationship.
No, it's been great for us. I mean, when you started contacting other students though in other universities, how did that come about? How did you make that happen?
Well, essentially I just found the sort of online opera networks, you know, on Facebook, the sort of opera talk and the likes. And I put out a post saying, are you young and interested in opera, and do you go to a particular university or have an affiliation with some kind of society, that sort of thing? I'd love to talk to you about setting up a sort of, you know, a coalition or collective of opera societies in the UK. And I just sent out that message and got a whole host of responses, thankfully, which was lovely. And I contacted all of the opera societies in the UK that are attached to universities individually as well. Mm. I got together a list of sort of 20 opera societies or so that were interested in making something of it. And from there on, I went to recruit a sort of small team or small committee. So we started off sort of completely without a clue of what direction it was going to go in. You know, I was lucky to be able to make the best of the social media out there.
Well, absolutely. There is absolutely that. But I think that when you're talking to fellow students, when you were a student, fellow students and young people, you know, because what I've never really wanted to do is do something so different from the actual product to try and attract young people to it, that to be so different it's almost like false advertising. I've never really tried to do the let's turn it into that. It's like, we're going to encourage you to come and we're going to try it, because for me, and I'm interested to see what you say about your colleagues as well, for me it's the getting through the door, it's making that bit welcoming. I don't really want to start diluting in any way the product or changing it to fit in with your, not your, but, you know, another person's image of it or what they would like to see, because otherwise they might as well go and see that, you know. So I'm very, very constant about this. I don't want to change the product too much, but I want to try and change the experience and the ease to coming in. Do you hear that sort of thing about the getting through the door is the problem?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't claim to be an expert, but from speaking to the cohort and to sort of questionnaires and that kind of thing, I think the thing that we notice particularly is that it's the culture of opera going that can be incredibly imposing to somebody who hasn't had those experiences before. Mm. You know, it's that sort of very, can appear as archaic, black tie hampers kind of thing that some companies really, you know, they use that to market. That's very appealing to a certain audience, but very, very off-putting to another sort of audience.
Indeed. But I think that when I talk to people, even people that are certainly not students into middle age, but they haven't been before, The question I get asked most of all about our place, which is pretty open anyway, is, well, what should I wear?
Yeah.
And I always say, God, you know, I don't care. Unless you're on stage in the show, they're the only clothes I care about. You can wear what, if you want to dress up, that's great. That's it, to be encouraged. If you don't want to, then don't. And I think that sometimes we do get a bit lost in that sort of problems, and that's really not a problem. You know, it just isn't. But there is something about appealing, you know, with deals. I guess cost is a big thing for yeah. students as well, although Absolutely. There's lots of deals, and most companies have variations on young person's deals or whatever, but cost must be still a thing as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's actually quite fascinating to look at our sort of European counterparts in Germany and Austria, where you can see ticket schemes for students that are sort of, you know, turn up on the day and €10, you get a front row ticket. I mean, of course there are drawbacks to that kind of system,
yep.
you know, geographical problems. Not everyone can do that, but you know, they're obviously more sort of state funded and it's just a system that I think a lot of people could sort of get behind here, that the idea that it doesn't have to be this sort of great special exception to have a student ticket, that it should sort of become the norm to have that yeah. option.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's very interesting. I think it's some of the things that are biggest barriers to people going into an opera house, not only younger people, is the things that we've sort of let develop into becoming the norm. It's the cost. It's obviously one. The foreign language thing with the surtitles is another. When to clap, in all those things that you just think, do I want to go and do that, put myself through that? But if we could just level a lot of those out, which, you know, we've tried over many years, you know, because I really don't mind any of that, really. But it is that welcoming thing, and the cost obviously is a massive thing. But as we're seeing at the moment, when hardly any shows on, cost is incredibly important as well, because opera is an expensive, you know, expensive thing. I mean, we've had free tickets to under 18s for maybe 15 years,
yeah,
which always get taken up every year, of course. And there's an interesting thing, because our school matinees are very successful, with 1,000 primary school kids all loving it. But then we seem to lose that age.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't got any worries about being enjoying it in front of their peers, particularly at that age. They just like it, and that's it. And then they get a bit older, and it becomes a little bit more difficult yeah. to encourage them to come in. Anyway, so it's been going well, the society, but then obviously we hit this March 2020 lockdown. Generally, you guys have reacted incredibly well with such a lot of online activity. Can you just talk a bit about what you've been doing in that time?
Of course. Well, I just want to say that a great sort of a factor in our success was that we recruited a whole new load of people to our team, and the sort of talent and the innovative nature of all of them has been absolutely, absolutely brilliant. And we've managed to really benefit from the new people involved. So when we recruited this new group of people in March, right, basically at the very beginning of the pandemic, we were sort of looking around for different opportunities and ways that we can make the most of it. And I think, you know, obviously Zoom and the online space became a very obvious choice. We initially started off with something that we called the Creative Skills Swap, which was essentially, you know, if you had been furloughed or whatever, you weren't working, you could say, I want help with this, and or you could offer help with something else. And
right.
it would swap those skills and you know, form more contacts, et cetera, which was great. And from there on, we decided that we would try and create a sort of program of events online that would be interviews or masterclasses, workshops, that kind of thing, that everyone could access for free. You know, it doesn't just have to be young people. Anyone's allowed to tag right. along. And we started to do two talks a week. Monday and Thursday. We started this in April and we're still continuing now. We've reduced the numbers due to
saturation.
we don't want the market to be too oversaturated, but we're still going, and we've had over 40 talks and 1,000 participants and that kind of level. So it's really been a very rewarding process, both for us to set up and see grow, and hopefully also for the people who've attended our talks. You know, we've had a lot of repeat visitors and people who come in and out for different ones, and it's been really lovely to get to know that group of people.
You've had some fantastic guests on. Do you want to talk about something?
Oh goodness, we've had so many. So we've tried to sort of get as varied a range of people across the industry as possible. So we've tried to get singers, you know, producers, managers, staff, designers, you know, if there's something we've missed, please let us know, and we will fill that gap. In terms of singers, we've tried to get both British and international singers to come and talk to us. So let me think. British singers, we've had Nikki Spence, Matthew Rose, Roderick Williams, Rebecca Kane, James Platt, Lee Bissett, whole host.
That's a great list.
Yeah. And international singers, we've had Amanda Majeski, Lisette Oropesa, Anthony Roth-Costanzo, Anoush Hovnisian, and Angel Blue, I think, which was amazing. We were absolutely thrilled to get to talk to all these people.
I'm sure. Izzy, if you haven't got a list in front of you, that's incredible.
Yeah, well, I know my answer.
All out there, see, very good. I've got to put you on the spot there.
They've been such exciting and interesting talks for me personally, as well as the audience, that I've really loved it. You know, it's been fantastic to hear from such talented and such interesting and pioneering people.
Also, because I've seen a few of your things, and I mean, I've been a guest on one, in fact, myself, but I wasn't a singer. But the thing is that all of those singers you mentioned, they all got into this business, and it is a business. You know, they got into this business because of vocation and love and their talent and skill. But every one of them, their sort of enthusiasm and their encouragement pours out of them when you interview them, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You
know, absolutely.
They really want the next generation to really be encouraged.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. I don't think there's anything I enjoy more than talking to people who clearly just absolutely love what they do, and they love the art form, and they want to share it with people. You know, regardless, they just love it, and it's fantastic to see that enthusiasm coming out, no matter whether it's a singer or a conductor or someone like you. You know, when we talked to you, it was just fantastic to hear the sort of love and enthusiasm for the art form. It's just great. It's fantastic to be able to speak to a group of people who clearly have the same goals in mind.
I think this is the thing at the moment. Thank you very much, by the way. It was a pleasure talking. But I think that I set you up nicely for that. But I think the thing is that we are all, you know, it's a serious industry. You know, the industry itself is going through a lot of problems at the moment, internally and externally, and perception as well as reality. But at the core of it, so many of the cliches about our industry is not true. I mean, it's incredibly committed and hardworking industry of people that just put the hours in, and it's very structured industry about our rehearsal sessions, our break times, our, you know, the call sessions, and it's good for that to be passed through to people that might not be seeing it so much, and it's, you know, just the going on stage bit, you know, it's so much work before that. I want to go back to this when you're going online, because it was a great decision to do online, because there was a lot of online work. I didn't like all of the online stuff. I think as an industry, we ran into it doing too much too quickly in some ways. But your thing, because it was being made by younger people for younger people on the whole, seemed to fit the aesthetic perfectly, actually. It just was the right time for that, I think. And so you know, obviously more of your people could tune in at any point rather than traveling to some of the venues that you normally do. So that in some ways that was a bit of a bonus for you to really shore up this membership. I know it's not an actual membership.
No, it's basically just a group of people who are somewhat united by their love of opera. There's no fees. I should have said that there's no cost to anything we do. So anyone can come along.
It is really nice. But I think that it was a time for this last 6 months to really shore up those people that were interested in and working with you, because you had such great content to them, and they didn't have to do as much for it in the way of going out or traveling somewhere. So what are the plans for the next sort of little stage? Because you've established this now, is you've got this going, you've got it going well. What's the next bit you're looking at?
Yeah, so I think continuing on into the short term, it's basically continuing on our programme of online events. We're hoping in the very near future to start putting out resources, basically, on our website that will help to sort of guide young people through and hopefully out of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So we've got together sort of, you know, where can you find student schemes? What are the young artist programs in the UK? Where you can train, that kind of thing. So whilst all of that knowledge is out there on the internet, of course, it's quite difficult to find it in one place. Yeah. So we're hoping to sort of have a resource hub that people can easily find out things that they might not otherwise know, that, you know, if you've been in the industry or work in the industry or whatever, you might assume people know, but people don't, you know, there's no saying what people do and don't know.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And also because even if organizations like ourselves or anyone else, just because you've told people once or even a couple of times doesn't mean that everyone, the nature of social media particularly is that things have gone so quickly, and it's great to have it there and reminded in it and in one hub.
Absolutely.
So I think that's really good. And we talked before last week. And so are you looking at trying to obtain charity status for
this? Yeah, absolutely. So our sort of long-term goal and the thing that we're sort of putting most of our efforts towards is obtaining charity status. And it's a sort of vicious circle, actually. So you need £5,000 in order to become a charity, but for the majority of cases, donors or trusts or whatever will only give you money if you are a charity.
So it
proves quite difficult to get to that first summit of £5,000. And I think, you know, the charity status, it's not just sort of because we want it. It really allows an organization to grow and to establish its reputation and sort of the people who want to be attached to it. And of course it would allow us to take on larger projects that do require more money. So we're hoping to run a series of online courses for people that maybe the start of their careers or people who are hoping to just sort of find out more about opera. Mm-hmm. And of course the aim is to keep everything free. Becoming a charity is really the next obvious step.
If someone out there in the Up Holland Park listeners wants to help, how can they help you by giving you money? What do they have to do? How can they find you?
They can find us on our website, which is nationalstudentoperasocietyuk.com. And we have a link to a Patreon and a PayPal account. So PayPal for one-off payments or Patreon for monthly payments. Right. And we're hoping in the next couple of months, because we're hoping to do a online Christmas fundraising concert featuring a lot of our previous speakers and our participants. So we're hoping to sort of bring together some of the people who we've already engaged with over the past few months to sort of have a nice festive online do. So we'll announce further details of that in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. But yeah, it'd be great if people would come along to that. So
I think that's all sounding great. I think the thing is, do you think that most of the people that join in are wanting a career in the business as a singer or off stage, or are they more people that just want to enjoy it as an art form? What do you think?
I would say that the majority wanted a career, which is fantastic. And I'm glad that we can help, you know, expand people's contacts and knowledge. And that's great. But I think, you know, one day in the future, it would be fantastic to be able to reach those people who maybe had a sort of glimmering interest in opera, but didn't feel confident or you know, didn't know exactly how to engage with it. I would absolutely love it if we could reach some of those people and just have a chat with them and show them that it's normal to like opera at a young age. Accessing those people is really, really hard.
I think what I've always said is the thing is, if you can, particularly with our family shows that we've done for many years, Alice in Wonderland and Fantastic Mr. Fox, that the kids and our school matinees now, the kids then are really enjoying it. And as I said earlier on, then we lose them for a few years. But it's just about that thing of when everyone was asking me why we were doing the family shows, it was just so that for enjoyment, enrichment of life, which is what everything we do is about. But it's also the thing of saying, well, they might get asked if they've ever been to an opera 10 years later. And even if their memory is, yeah, it did when I was a kid. And it was all right, you know. It was a thing. It doesn't have to be immediate. It can be a grower. It doesn't need to be an immediate thing. But the big thing is that when they've been, to have enjoyed the experience. And then, you know, you're not fighting against it. If you had a terrible experience, a question I get asked loads is, oh, so you love opera? And, well, I don't love it all.
No, absolutely not.
And it's like this, not this blanket thing that's the thing I tend to like more than I don't like, obviously. Oh, but there's many operas I would run from not seeing. And if I'd have seen one of those as the first thing, you know, then that would have been the end of that.
Yep.
So it's an encouragement thing of saying, you know, try it, but also, you know, you've probably heard me say this before, but you know, if you went to a restaurant and you didn't like the food, you wouldn't say you don't like food. You just would go to another restaurant, or you might even go back to the restaurant and have a different dish. There's not immediate thing. People saying, I've been to the opera, didn't like it. Well, wow. If you could all be as definite in other things as that would be incredible. And everyone does work at this, of course, but I think there is still a level that we're not all really getting through. And having you run in this society will help us all, and talking to you and talking to your members, inverted commas, talking to them, just seeing what they want and how to get them in is a great thing. But I think most of all, it's the thing that a lot of other people like. It's about taking away some of the mystique.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. Well, hopefully that's what we do. It's certainly what we're trying to do.
You certainly do. Well, Izzy, it's been wonderful speaking to you. Thank you so much for everything you've been doing and all of your colleagues on this. It's a great initiative. And we're proud to be associated with it at Opera Holland Park. And I'm proud to be associated with you and it personally. So
thank you very much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to From the Producer's Office, a series of informal podcasts with James Clutton. For more information on Opera Holland Park, please visit www.operahollandpark.com.